October 1st, 1962 is a day I'll always remember. I was 36 years old, taking my place as host of America's most popular late-night program, The Tonight Show.
From New York, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson. Johnny's guests tonight are Joan Crawford, Rudy Valley, Tony Bennett, Mel Brooks, the Phoenix Singers, Skitch Henderson with the NBC Orchestra, and me, I'm Ed McMahon. Right now, let's welcome the fellow you waited 6 months to see.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. This is kind of an emotional thing for me because I've known about this show for a long time. And the newspapers and the magazines, and I've probably been interviewed 150 times in the last 9 months since I've known about this. And as I say, you work up to it. We come over here this afternoon. We meet the guests that are on the show. And you get kind of charged up. I don't mean to be maudlin about it. But I know that tonight a lot of people, a lot of my friends are watching all over the country. And I only have one feeling as I stand here knowing that so many people are watching. I want my man there.
Well, I made it through that first night with the help of Groucho Marx, Rudy Valley, Joan Crawford, Tony Bennett, and Mel Brooks. I could never have imagined I would walk through that curtain almost 5,000 times in 30 years.
The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
And now, here's Johnny!
All right, it's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. So this Sunday marks the 30th anniversary of Johnny Carson's final Tonight Show after nearly 30 years on the air. It was May 22nd, 1992. With Johnny presenting a retrospective of clips covering three decades as the king of late night. There were no guests, and the audience had to receive an invitation to be there. 50 million people tuned in to watch the send-off, and there's one man that knew Johnny very well, and that is his nephew, Jeff Sotzing, who also is the president of Carson Entertainment, and he joins us tonight. Jeff, welcome in. You know, it was 1962 when Johnny Carson took over The Tonight Show for Jack Parr. After months and months and a variety of guest hosts stepped in, there was a lot of anticipation here.
Basically, there was a number of guest hosts because at the time he was the host of Who Do You Trust,
on
a game show on ABC. Yeah, and they wouldn't let him out of his contract for 6 months, so they had to fill in for 6 months, which I think was good because by the time he got there, people were ready for something different, and he was a fresh face. It actually turned out to be fantastic for him.
There was a lot of anticipation. And a lot of talk, and a lot of media talk about Johnny taking over this show.
Well, and huge shoes to fill. Jack Parr was such an iconic figure. I mean, who's going to be able to replace Jack? So that was not an easy thing for him to do.
And I know he launched the show in New York, which now after watching a color clip of
right.
The Tonight Show, I see that Fallon uses a similar blue curtain that was behind Johnny those first years in New York, which maybe that's a little nod to him.
Well, and that show, the Fallon Show, was in the actual studio that Johnny was in when he was in New York between 62 and 72.
Wow. That's very cool.
Yeah, 6B. Yeah, it's very cool.
Now, the early episodes are a little more rare, but when I watch them now, even the 90-minute episodes, I got to tell you, and I know you know this, Johnny was a master at his craft and what he did, bouncing from two to three top celebrities of the day, comedians, politicians, musicians, authors, everyday people, sometimes all on the same show. When I sit there and I watch it and I think, boy, that's a long time to watch a show, 90 minutes. I'm sad when it's over.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. And it is easy. It is really, really difficult to do and make it look easy.
Yeah, I bet. Now, I know you worked for him with him for years. When did you start the relationship on air? Now, were you ever part of the New York days or did that come, because you're a young guy, did that come in really when they moved to California?
No, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia, so, you know, like my earliest memories of The Tonight Show was in 1961, where one morning I woke up and there was this guy sleeping on our couch, and I said to my mom, who's that? And she said, that's your Uncle Dick from California. He's come out to the East Coast, and he's going to direct The Tonight Show, and your Uncle John is going to be the host of The Tonight Show.
He's sleeping on the couch.
So that's a pretty good deal. One of my uncles is the host of The Tonight Show, and the other one is the director, and you know, all through my junior high and high school, if I wanted to go and see The Temptations or Aretha Franklin, I'd jump on the train from Philadelphia and go to New York and sit in the audience and watch rehearsal and you had to be 16 to see the show, so I couldn't see the show, but I could sit in the booth with Dick Carson, and I watched the show for years and years and years, and when it moved to the West Coast, I had actually gone into the service, and when I got out of the service, I moved to the West Coast, and I started in, 1978.
Now, how did that conversation go with your Uncle Johnny about this? Was this something that he knew you wanted to do and said, hey, Jeff, let's give this a shot. Why don't you come work on the show? How did that all come about?
Well, you know, As I say, I loved the show as a kid, and I'd always go and watch rehearsal, and then after the show, we'd go backstage. Usually my dad would take me, or I'd go by myself when I got older and see Uncle John and, you know, talk about show business. And I had actually gone to Pasadena City College, and I was studying videotape editing. And, you know, we always had Christmas and Thanksgiving and, you know, barbecues, family get-togethers. And at Christmas, he said to me, what are you doing? And I told him that I had been studying to be a videotape editor, and I'd been there for a couple of years. And a few months later, he called my mom and said, do you think Jeff would want to work on The Tonight Show as the receptionist? So my first job was, you know, sorting the mail, getting all the, taking calls. And he said, it'll be a great way for you to learn everybody. You'll know everybody's business. And, you know, you just do it for the summer. And I said, terrific. And I never left.
Wow. I mean, just think about that. I mean, this is, you know, your uncle, but one of the most powerful men on television. And it was at a time where, what do we have, 3 channels, 4 or 5, maybe a couple of UHF
right.
outlets. So
right.
everybody was watching the show. I mean, it's at its height, 15 million people, 18 million people watching the show every night?
Oh, more like 30.
30 million.
I mean, when we did, you know, my jobs that I had towards the end of my run was associate producer and producer with Peter LaSalle, and we put together the anniversary shows, and those were primetime compilation highlights from the past year. And if we didn't do 30-40 share, we thought we were not doing very good at all.
That's amazing. That's amazing when you think about it today. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just completely different. And when I started the show, I made a deal with the producer, with Freddie, that he wouldn't tell anybody who I was. And basically, we did the show on Thanksgiving one year, and I was backstage watching Johnny go on through the curtain. And he turned to me and he said, I'll see you in about an hour. And then he walked through the curtain, and everybody turned to me and said, why are you going to see Johnny in about an hour?
You know, I like that, though, that you made that agreement, because, you know, you don't want that special treatment. You want to, and that says a lot about you. You want to work hard and be a producer and not come along for the ride because you're a family member. You want to work hard and earn your stripes. And that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, and I think it makes it easier to deal with the staff and the crew, because, you know, they know you've got a great deal and they know you're a privileged person. So, I was grateful that Fred allowed me to do that, and Fred was probably hoping that I would have my summer job and then leave, and then I never left. So,
what was, if I may ask, a typical day at The Tonight Show? How would that roll?
It was a super well-oiled machine. So, you know, basically, the writers were there early, and there was a group of writers who created the monologue. There was a group of writers who did what they called a desk spot. So that's like Karnak or little material reading spots they would do after the monologue. The writers would then put all the monologues together and bring them to the receptionist desk, which I was at the time. And I'd put them in an envelope and call a messenger. And a messenger would come to The Tonight Show and drive the monologues out to Johnny's house, if you can believe that. I mean, we didn't have a computer on The Tonight Show at all, even when we went off the air in 1992.
Is that right? Okay.
So, and then the talent coordinators and the rest of the production staff would come in around 10 o'clock, and they would have a booking meeting from between 10 and noon, and that's when they would book talent and make calls and figure out what the day would be like. And then there was a production meeting with the staff and the crew at noon. Everybody had lunch between noon and like 1, and there was rehearsal at 2 and band rehearsal at 3, and the show was started at 5:30 on the money. And when I first started, it was 90 minutes. So it was 5:30 to 7,
wow.
And then it was 5:30 to 6 after after 1980. And it was, you know, it was live. You know, you didn't stop. You didn't do any retakes. It was live, and it was really, really exciting.
That's why I think made that so show special, is because you taped it as if it was live. What time would Johnny get in?
He would get in at like 2:30, you know, 2 o'clock. Sometimes he'd come early, but most of the time he was. He was, you know, if he had to do a sketch or if he had to come in and do some publicity work. But, you know, by the time I started on the show, it was already 15 years in, he was kind of done doing publicity, and he had it down. He knew what he was doing.
Well, we are talking to Jeff Sotsing. Jeff is the president of Carson Entertainment and Johnny Carson's trusted nephew. Johnny Carson, by the way, airs weeknights on Antenna TV, and we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of Johnny's final Tonight Show, and there's more after this on 720 WGN.
As you know, the San Diego Zoo is one of the finest zoos in the world, and we've had this young lady on the show very often the past, I guess, 7 or 8 years she's been appearing with us.
9 years.
About
9 years.
Right, yeah. Several plus several would be about nine.
You said seven or eight.
No, I didn't say seven or eight. I said several.
Then you said seven or eight, and I said
did
it's
I?
Nine.
Yes. Nine. Good, thank you.
Yeah. Some of the animals you had as babies are now 10 years old.
That would be about right.
Remember the animals that did something funny on your tie?
Yes.
Those little lions, the little baby lions, were 1 year old.
That's right.
They are now treacherous and ferocious 10-year-old animals.
Okay. Anyway, Joan Embry is here tonight.
And she's now 32.
That's right. Joan is an animal handler and a trainer. And you really think you're fooling everybody, don't you?
No.
And she
I'm
also
just here to do my best to help you.
I know that. And she does her 3 horse shows a day. Did you know that? At the animal park.
Boy.
What?
What an exciting idea.
Would you like an army cot or something? Maybe just to kind of catch up on a little nappy poo? Just might snap you out of it. Okay.
I love Joan. I'm the only one who went down to see Joan. Doc has never seen her. You've never seen her. I went to the wild animal farm.
It's all right. Okay.
But you're upsetting me.
I don't want to upset you.
I went down, Joan, and I
know you did. That's all right.
Fine. Don't say. No.
What?
I know her. I went down and.
Oh, I know you did. I know you went down there. And
I held a baby gorilla.
I couldn't go with you that week. You held a baby gorilla. Good. All right.
That was a clip of The Tonight Show in 1977 with Johnny and Ed McMahon after Ed had a few too many cocktails at lunch. It's Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking to one of Johnny's original producers, his nephew and president of Carson Entertainment, and that is Jeff Sotsing. You told me a story once about one day when Johnny was driving in from Malibu, and sometimes that drive was 1 to 2 hours to get to the Burbank studios, and you made him an offer that he did refuse.
This was towards the very end of his career when he was making a lot of money, and he had been caught in L.A. traffic during a storm, and it took him maybe 2 hours to get in, and he was not a happy camper. And I said, hey, I'm a private pilot. He was a private pilot. I said, let me research what it would take to have a helicopter pick you up somewhere near your house in Malibu, and I know you can fly right to NBC because they have a KNBC news helicopter that sits out there all the time, so we have a landing pad, so let me figure it out. So sure enough, I figured it out. It's great. And I go to see him a couple of days later, and he says, did you find out about the helicopter? I said, yeah, it's incredible. It takes 15 minutes. They pick you up at like 1:45, 2 o'clock, you're here. You finish your show at, 6:30, 7 o'clock. They take you home. 7:15, you're home. It's great. And he says, well, what would that cost? And I said, it's $600 each way. And there was this long pause, and he looked at me and he said, Jeff, who would spend $600 or $1,200 to go to work every day? What kind of person does this? Oh, Jeff, come on. I mean, I'd heard about it for a month.
But you know what? He's a guy that was making $25 million probably a year, but that was the Midwest guy in him.
So Ed McMahon had a chauffeur, a limousine, and Johnny drove himself.
Yeah.
So.
That was funny. Did he have a pretty good... Yeah. I know Ed McMahon worked with him on Who Do You Trust on ABC and brought him over to The Tonight Show. What was the relationship like between the two of them? I know they were probably pretty close in the earlier days, but as time went on, did they just see each other on the show? Like, how did that dynamic work?
I think that they were much closer socially in the beginning, but, these guys worked together for 40, some years, you know.
So there was Ed McMahon, of course, and then Skitch Henderson was the music director until Doc came along. I met Doc this week, and he's 89. And my God, first of all, he looks fabulous, and he's even more fabulous in person. I mean, it was just such an honor to meet him. But what a great dynamic between these three guys for so many years on this show.
Yeah, it really clicked. I mean, they had, Johnny and Skitch had a really good relationship too, but Doc was even. Had an even better relationship with Johnny and the crazy outfits that happened in the late 60s were just perfect fodder for him during the monologue. And, you know, again, you think about the music that's involved in that show, it was just insane. You know, you have to do the theme, and you have to do all the bumper music, and you have to do all the guests. I mean, it's a lot of work. And you know, the Tonight Show band, the Tonight Show Orchestra, they backed up everybody from, you know, Pavarotti to ZZ Top. It was incredible.
It was fantastic, and I was watching Doc over by one of the speakers in the museum this past week, like just sitting there up close, listening to the music and just tapping his foot. It was pretty cool.
He says to me, you know, with Sean Compton from Antenna TV was so smart, he decided to have a compilation of all Doc's music playing in the background when we went up for the exhibit, and Doc says to me, "Hey, this music is really good." I said, "It's you." Don't you realize? He goes, "Oh, yeah, this is really good."
I would love to, and I know there's rights issues with everything, but, man, that would be great to throw out some music on a disc or on Apple iTunes or something with all of I know he's done a couple albums, but all that music, man, that he did is classic. Like, you'll never see an orchestra like that on television again, I don't think.
Well, no, and, you know, people forget that in the 60s and 50s, CBS and ABC and NBC all had, their own orchestra. The Tonight Show Band is not the Tonight Show Band. It's Doc Severinsen and the NBC Orchestra. That's the title. And if you did a special like, you know, Dean Martin did the Gold Diggers, or you did Hullabaloo, or you did Laugh-In, you hired the NBC Orchestra, and they were right there.
You know, really funny that. We had at this radio station for probably 30 years, from the 1930s through the 60s, we had a WGN orchestra that would play on the air here. I mean, it's wild, but every station had something like that, but not anymore. That's kind of something that's gone by.
Well, yeah, and then in the 70s, you know, they got rid of everybody. ABC and CBS got rid of these guys, and yeah, I'm sure that NBC wanted to get rid of them, and Johnny said, "No, that's my kind of music, and I love that, and we're going to keep the band." And, you know, you talk to Doc, and he will tell you that was the greatest thing that ever happened to him, to have a gig for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, that is so regimented that he can go out and do weekend gigs, and even a lot of those guys play gigs at night, so that's a great deal.
What guests did Johnny really look forward to having on the show? You know, I something that always was like a great experience, not only for him, but for the audience as well. Who did he enjoy having on?
He loved people who came on and were prepared. So Steve Martin would always come out and have a piece of material that would be drop dead. You know, Bette Midler, you know, especially look at the show from May 21st, 1992. She does these unbelievable numbers. Just super, super prepared, professional people. He really liked that. You know, Rodney Dangerfield, we'd ask him to come on the show, you know, twice a year, and he'd say, no, just once, because he wanted to be prepared. And he had his material that he would do center stage, and then he had his material that he would do at the panel. And, you know, Johnny, just, you watch him with these guys, and you can see that he's just having a great time. And one of the things that he was so good at was helping direct these performers on there with their material, so he could set them up, and they all, you know, Joan Rivers would talk about how wonderful Johnny was at setting up a comedian. How hot was it? How's your health? Your health okay? Okay, good. Everything doing? You just set him up.
Well, he let people shine. I mean, it wasn't all about him. He let his guests shine. If he really liked you, he really opened the door for you, and especially the comedians that were on that show.
Yeah, and he told me that Jack Benny had told him once that, you know, no matter what happens on the show, you're going to get the credit. So just make the show look good.
Well, more with President of Carson Entertainment, Jeff Satzing, on the legacy of his uncle, Johnny Carson, right after this on 720 WGN.
No, boo. Here's your boo. Anyway, boo this. Now, that's an Italian expression for how's the family.
John, I haven't been on with you for some time.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, well, you've been busy with other things. And I heard the other party's story, and...
Well, done.
Well, I'm going to help her get all we can get. I only kid you, John, because, you know, you... Your mother, your dad, your whole family, well, your father, rest his soul, he's gone, but your mother, you know, she did call me, and you're short again. I mean, $50 a week and working as a house cleaner is a little out of it. When you're a multimillionaire sitting out at Malibu with those nine-year-olds going, little girl.
Well, you do kind of regress. Yes. That's true.
Because we go back a lot of years.
Oh, do we ever.
We know each other. Right. I know Ed.
Slate Brothers?
Yeah. Ed I used to be very close with, but he got too big.
Yeah.
He sits around now with his wife, Victoria, going, we're bigger than Johnny.
He's got shows all over.
Star Search, Hunt Your Dog, Look for Your Monkey, Find Your Animal, Winter Weekend, 7 weeks in El Segundo, it's the whole thing. And he keeps telling me, isn't it a shame how Johnny's doing bad? I'm a friend. The guy knocks you.
Yeah.
Anyway, look at this. Tommy Newsom and the other guy, Doc Simpson, went, we love you. We love you, Johnny. We'll do whatever you want. They're all busy going. Okay. No, I don't have to do that. That's why I haven't been on in a great deal of time.
That's right.
It's about 2 years since I started. I got the phone call and I started doing. I don't need you. Belch, I hope your beer truck blows up.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever been close to breaking up?
My wife and I?
No, your dog and you. Of course your wife. Yes.
My dog and me.
Yes, Barbara.
Have I ever been close to breaking up? I'll be very honest. I was more sensible than you. You got married when you were 12. You got married when you were 8.
I was 20.
I'm exact.
I was 25 the first time
Well, what did you know? You were out in Nebraska going strawberry shortcake, cuckabay pie, V-I-C-T-O-L-A, Nebraska. What did you know?
Well,
and he was running around going, off we go into the wild blue yonder. He was a moron, too, and both of you have college educations. I never went to college. I married a wonderful Jewish girl that just lays there and says, Gucci, Gucci, Gucci.
Well, you got married very late in life.
Right.
Because
look at the way I look. But anyway, no, I got, because I knew, we both knew, I was in between marriages with you. Well, I was 38 before I got married.
Well, you didn't.
You knew
wanna,
that. I ran around. I was in heat for singers.
Oh, ran around?
Well, singers always knocked me out. But I knew it was over when I started carrying
music.
I saw
some of those singers you had. Right?
Yeah. Well, I've seen some of the girls. You went in between marriages, and they weren't exactly, you know, I've seen you with a couple of moose. But in those days when you drank, you kept saying, you're gorgeous. No! I didn't go overboard with the other broad like some of my black brothers that go, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Jews don't do that. They said, we'll start in a minute. I'm going to go get a paper. and you Irish guys go, and Victoria, is it over? Anyway, so.
One of the guests that I can watch over and over again on YouTube on the DVD collections that you sell from the archives is Don Rickles. And I know it always looked like Johnny just didn't quite know what was coming from Don, because Don is kind of an open book when it comes to coming on the show and so forth. And I knew they knew each other for a long time, like from the days of Murray Franklin's and everything. That always was a treat, I think, when Don was on the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was performing in Las Vegas in the lounge, and you know, Johnny and Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, all these guys that were the headliners, they would go see Rickles at, you know, at the lounge after they did their shows. I mean, that was the big deal. They loved to go see Rickles and maybe Louis Prima and Kelly Smith. I mean, all these guys, I mean, Keeley Smith, I mean, they'd love to see Rickles. And Johnny and Rickles were working together from like the 60s, so
yeah.
It's amazing that they did that for so long.
Now, I'm aware of one guest, because I've seen you talk about this before, that he had a little bit of a challenge with, and that was a fellow NBC personality, Bob Hope. There was a little bit of frustration, because I think Bob would just kind of call up and say, hey, I'm coming over to do the show. And I noticed this as a kid, Jeff, now, because you know, I was born in 67, so I missed a lot of the early years. But I remember when Bob would come on the show, there was just such a... You know, and he was Bob Hope. I completely understand that. I respect who he is as an actor, as a performer, as a comedian. But he always seemed like he was in a rush. He always seemed like he had some place to go afterwards. I noticed this as a kid, and I always noticed the clip packages he would bring about his specials looked like somebody taped them together and brought him into the studio. I knew that as a kid. I was like, what the hell is this? Am I right to say that? Was that Johnny's experience too with this?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, Bob Hope was the biggest star of radio, film, and television. And when Johnny was a kid, Bob Hope was a big star.
Yeah.
So because of that, and because of Bob Hope's relationship with NBC, he could head carte blanche. He could do whatever he wanted. He could come on whatever he wanted. And there was times when we had our show formatted and ready to go, and Bob wanted to come on tomorrow. Bob wants to promote his special tomorrow. And, okay, so you have to reschedule the whole show. You have to rework everything, and then we'd say make sure that the clip is no longer than 2 minutes, and the clip would be 5 minutes. And I think that frustrated him, but, you know, he had such, you know, admiration and respect for Bob Hope. But, you know, it just frustrated him more than anything else. It didn't really upset him, believe me. He was very upset when he passed away, too. That was awful.
I bet. Jeff, there are not many, if any, full shows from the 1960s, except some excerpts. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's because it was a common practice to re-record over the shows to save money for the tape.
So there was
hard to believe.
Yeah, so it was never saved. And so there's pictures, even from the first show. There's audio, which I find really interesting, of the first show, but just pictures. But everything really from the days in Burbank from 72 to 92 have been archived, and that's something that you convinced Johnny to do.
Well, when the show moved from New York to Burbank in 1972, they decided to put together an anniversary special, and that's when they realized they did not have all this material and that it had been destroyed. At first, they said it would have been destroyed. It took us a long time to figure out that, no, it was actually reused. Nobody wanted to cop that, but it had been reused. So Johnny was powerful enough to say to NBC at that time, you know, I want to have possession of all this material. I want to make sure that nothing is destroyed from now on. And by the time I got there, I got involved in these anniversary specials, and that's when we needed to actually create a database and, you know, buy a computer. We bought a computer like with DOS 1.0 and a very primitive spreadsheet and started to build out this database, which actually we still use today. That's how we're able to find all these shows and see these shows, and it's a terrific thing. But he was just had the vision to say, let's protect this. He never expected it to be as successful as it was, but he definitely had some vision.
Which is brilliant. I don't think people really know where they're stored. Tell people how and where these are stored.
They are all in a salt mine in Kansas, in Hutchinson, Kansas. And basically this mine, it was a huge mine that's used to mine salt that is sprayed over the roads in the winter. And after years and years of this mining operation, they had this basically a vault that is about the size of 250 football fields. It's 200 and some feet below the surface of the earth. It's flood proof. It's fireproof. It's the same humidity, it's the same temperature. And, there had been a fire right next to the warehouse where our tapes were stored in L.A., and the people from underground vaults and storage in Hutchinson came to us and said, you know, we have this facility, and we'll make you a great deal. So not only was it great for us to be able to move it to Kansas for security, but when they did that, then they had to barcode everything, and when they barcoded everything, then I had a really good idea of what we had. So, I mean, there's probably 100,000 pieces of videotape in the vault. It's amazing.
Wow. And you have to take oxygen and stuff to go down there. I mean, this isn't something you just walk into underground.
Well, it's an operating mine. They're still mining. So if you go into a mine, you need to have a breathing device with you in case they, you know, cut into a vein of methane or something that's lethal. So it's, you have to wear a hard hat. It's a little hairy.
I'm sure it is. Well, you can catch all these great episodes that Jeff and his team have brought to Antenna TV every weeknight. You can also get The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, all kinds of collections, full episodes, a lot of content and much more at one of your websites.
JohnnyCarson.com. There you go. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I will tell you, it was a pleasure meeting you. I'm thrilled and excited that Johnny was smart enough to put a guy like you in charge of his legacy, and you've done such a wonderful job with it, and thank you for sharing it with us, because now we can see it again every single night.
Thank you, Dave. My pleasure.
Dave Fire, WGN.
Our celebration continues on the 30th anniversary of the final airing of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson back in 1992. And on stage with him was legendary bandleader and trumpeter, the iconic Doc Severinsen. Doc, can you believe it's been 30 years since the last time you were on stage with Johnny?
Well, if you want to know the truth, to me, it seems like it was a couple of weeks ago or maybe yesterday. I don't know.
You began with NBC really much longer before The Tonight Show. I mean, it was over a decade. It was like 1949. How did the gig come about with NBC that you got your first contract?
Well, let's see. It was the Kate Smith Show, which was one of their staples in the beginning, and she was on five afternoons a week.
Wow.
At 4 o'clock. And so the show had been on a year or so, and they wanted to make a change in the band, and I was invited to come and be the first trumpet player on the show. And so I did it, and it was just the equivalent of doing a local show at that time, because the network really only consisted of the five O&O stations, you know, like yeah. Chicago, New York, L.A., so on and so forth.
Sure.
And then it became apparent that television was really going to be here to stay, and then they started adding stations. I noticed that when Steve Allen came and did The Tonight Show. It was a local show in New York, and they called it something else, probably Open House or something, and Steve Allen took over the show, and I can remember as clear as like it was yesterday, well, welcome to the show tonight, folks, and guess what? We got station whatever, in Schenectady, New York, is joining the NBC family.
Wow.
And it every night they added, and I was
cool.
Sitting there in the band watching a network be born.
So you were always there from the beginning, but it was 5 years later. Skitch decided to leave the show. Was there a reason that he decided to step down? Was it enough for him? Did he just do, you know, just exactly what he wanted to do, and he was ready for a change?
He had other things he wanted to do.
Gotcha.
And so he did them, and Johnny, you know, everyone thought I was going to be the heir apparent, and as it turned out, a wonderful gentleman by the name of Milton Deluck took over the band. And Milton was just a beautiful guy and a damn good musician and had experience on the Broadway Open House. And after about a year of that, I was on a tour with Johnny doing a weekend in Baltimore. And the producer of the show came up to me and said, "Hey, Johnny wants you to come back and take over the show. He misses having you there." And however he put it.
Yeah.
And I saw it. I was just getting ready to say, "Well, I'm pretty busy. You know, I got a lot of dates." I said, "Yes, of course I'll be there." And I had no idea what that was going to be like.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, too, about that. I'm sure Johnny noticed, you know, that there was some good chemistry between the two of you. Because, I mean, it was so obvious on the show that it's not, you know, for a job like that, it's not just being a great band leader. It's about having...
You got it.
Yeah.
Johnny, one of Johnny's favorite people in show business was Jack Benny. He liked
yes.
the way Jack Benny did his show, where he had Phil Harris was the band leader. Yeah. You knew he was the band leader. He even had Frankie Remley, the guitar player, as part of the cast of
yeah.
characters.
Yeah.
And, of course, Don Wilson was the announcer. And so Johnny wanted a show where he could have other people and spread it around a little bit and not put so much pressure on himself and wear it out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, totally.
So that was, I never for 1 minute thought, well, you're leading the band for the Tonight Show because Johnny thinks I'm the best leader around. It never occurred to me. I knew why I was there.
Well, we are talking to the legendary Doc Severinsen. It's the 30th anniversary of the final Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. And there's more with Doc after the top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
What was that last note you hit on? Was that it? What was that last note on trumpet?
It was a B-flat concert. High B-flat concert.
And
high
B-flat. It hurts!
Is that the highest note you can hit on the trumpet?
No, it depends on what happened the day before.
But that's a high note, high B-flat, right?
Yeah. You're getting in the danger zone with
that. Do the high B-flat again and then see if you can go above it. Do the high B flat and then
you
sneak.
Have any idea?
No, I don't.
What
I
you're asking me to do?
I know.
Do it, 23 years, you've never asked me anything.
Well, that takes great embouchure, as they say, right?
Let's hear it, Doc.
Great embouchure.
You can want an
sneak up to the sneak on up.
Well, can't we have the whole band play?
No, I don't want to cover over this. I want to just clean.
State Player on 720 WGN. We're celebrating the 30th anniversary this weekend of the final episode of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, and we're talking to music legend Doc Severinsen. Johnny Carson airs weeknights on Antenna TV, and I was pretty young when, those first 20 years that the show aired, but this was a show that was the pulse of pop culture, TV, movies, music, sports, politics. It is a virtual history lesson in every single show.
You're so right. It is a history lesson, but it isn't a history lesson about show business or television. Mm-hmm. It's a history lesson about America.
You guys had great conversations when he would look to his left and come out of the curtain and just talk to you during the monologue or whatever it was. And by the way, always wanted to see what you were wearing. That was always the highlight. Even as a kid, I was like, what does this man have on today? Because you had some cool stuff, man.
Well, and one night I remember, I thought, every night I'm coming out in a wild outfit or something that's supposed to be a little different, and I'm tired of that. Jesus, I can't shop enough. I said, I'm just going to put on a regular suit. So I wore a blue suit and a regular tie. And when the show was over, Johnny walked into his dressing room. And as I'm told by the producer, he said, well, what in the hell was with that blue suit that Doc had on tonight? For God's sakes. What is that? And the next night or the next afternoon when I came to work, the producer said, no more blue suits.
That's great. That's great. When I met you, we were walking through the Carson exhibit and we had one of your wild outfits in a showcase. And this was fabulous. We walked over to it together and you looked at it and you kind of stared at it for a little bit. And you put your hand on your chin and you just looked at it for really silence for about 2 minutes. And you turned to me and you said, I wondered where this suit went. which was so much fun. But that was, you had quite a flair for fashion over the years. And again, the conversations you and Johnny had, and of course, my favorite was when the topic of Thanksgiving came up.
I was going to ask you if you got your turkey yet.
Sure. Do you, truthfully, do you help Mrs. Carson prepare the turkey?
Just like you helped Mrs. Severinsen prepare the turkey.
No, there is no Mrs. Severinsen.
Oh, that's right.
There used to be.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
The fact that I never helped her stuff her bird was one of our big problems.
I thought that was your problem. Well, now, I forgot all about that. We've been together so long that I forget sometimes where we are.
Which wife are we on?
On various Thanksgivings. No, we're good.
In fact, that was one of the things we really fought about.
What?
I wanted an oyster stuffing in the turkey, and she wanted bread stuffing, and she got bread stuffing and a lot of money.
You mean you used to argue about what you're going to stuff the turkey with?
Yes.
And that was one of the problems.
She's still stuffing the turkey with money.
Well, it's nice to know you have no bitterness.
Well, I always used to say,
You know, I mean, you can have turkey and all that. I don't like turkey that much.
Yeah.
I love lasagna. She calls up every year at Thanksgiving and says, are you having your lasagna?
They don't forget, do they?
No. I suppose you'll be home with the family having turkey. Just a typical American family.
That's right. If you really feel badly now, I feel so terrible that you're going to be alone. Was you like...
I didn't say I was going to be alone.
You just said you ain't going to eat no turkey, right?
That's right.
You can come over there. Would you like to come to the house? And
this is the first time you've ever asked me.
Well, you made me feel so guilty.
I mean, you, when you ask an employee in front of 15 million people, do you want to come to the house for Thanksgiving dinner? What am I going to say? No. You know what I say? I say, yes, Mr. Carson, I love it.
Can you come?
No.
Doc, I got to tell you, what a pleasure it has been to hang out with you a little bit. You're a legend, man, and it's a thrill for me.
Well, it's very kind of you to say that, and I appreciate the time and chance, you know, reminisce a little bit. And of course, at this time of the year, I'm doing a lot of that. And I just got to tell you one final thing, and it's that as I go through life and I'm challenged in some particular way, I always stop and ask myself, usually about a matter of how should I behave about this or that or some other thing. And I think, okay, what would Johnny Carson do in this situation? And I go by that, and it usually turns out to be right.
Wow.
Until the time I had an appointment with the witch doctor, and that didn't work too well.
Nice. Nice. Very nice. I like that you channeled Johnny for that, though. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. And I will never forget exactly where I was and so forth when I heard about that Sunday morning. It was about 7:30 in the morning, and I was taking a shower, and I heard my wife let a yelp out, and I got out of the shower and said, what the hell's going on? What was that about? She says, well, I don't know how to tell you this, but Johnny just died.
Yeah.
And Jeff Sotsen had called to let her know, and my life changed at that moment. I mean, it was not just something that happened and you get over. I'll always remember that as one of the seminal moments in my life.
I think I felt that emotion and saw it in your face the very next night. I think you were in New York on that Monday, I think, with David Letterman and Tommy Newsom. And Ed Shaughnessy, and playing that tribute to Johnny on stage. And I remember how emotional, not only that, it was exhausting watching that show, seeing all of you together doing that for Johnny.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And now Ed Shaughnessy and Tommy Newsom are gone.
Yeah.
And kind of makes me wonder, well, does anybody have any idea when it's my turn?
And, hopefully a long time from now, Doc. Hopefully a long time from now.
It could be. It could be. But I don't think about it how long, but how good is the time going to be in the meantime?
That's right.
And that's about the best any of us can do. And I sure do. I appreciate it. Chance to talk to somebody about all of this that we discussed.
Well, it was an honor for me. Thank you. No, thank you for taking
the time. Thanks a million.
Absolutely. Thank you, Doug.
We'll see you on the scene.
Dave Fire, WGN.
But I wax nostalgic on Lincoln's birthday. Every Lincoln's birthday, I reminds me of my old girlfriend back in Nebraska, Gina Statutory. Name was Gina Statutory, and she went to Lincoln High, and she was voted Miss Lincoln because every guy in school took a shot at her in the balcony.
Gawker's own Bill Zamy, who's one of the most successful and influential magazine writers and biographers of his generation, conducted an exclusive post-Tonight Show interview with the legendary Johnny Carson. And to take a comprehensive look at Johnny's life in and out of show business and share that conversation, the man that knows more about Carson than anybody else is the amazing Bill Zamy. Hey, Bill.
You're the only other one, actually. You and me, we got it down. No, you know who
we might.
Is a gentleman named... runs Antenna TV over there, and I don't even know if they're affiliated anymore with the WGN world.
Oh, we are. Whatever. Oh, yeah.
They are. Good. Well, it's Antenna TV. Every night we get Johnny again. I mean, Johnny has been missing. We've only had these little crummy compilation things, but now we're getting the whole show for the most part. With a few little caveats here or there, but this is the work of a fellow named Sean Compton.
Sean Compton, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's the magic man. He's the he likes to challenge me in my Carson knowledge.
Is that right?
I am superior. I am vastly superior. However, he knows he knows things that happen on certain shows that would take me, you know, at least a Google search.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And it is cool. I'll tell you, Bill, too. Watch it like live and breathe in real time, and see some of the. I mean, what it told me was he is just a master in every interview.
It's fascinating to just look at the power he exudes, and it's not an obnoxious power. It's a comforting one. He's so in charge of our psyche. And this is, you know, at the time, he was in charge of our psyche, but you can kind of see why now, you know?
I mean,
you can say, sure, now we got a million choices, and you can flip around and see anything, and you hit Johnny, and you're going to think, well, this is going slow. and then you start realizing, wait, he's doing all this himself. Everything all the boys do today with all their, you know, drop-ins and visual, footage and things like that. Johnny didn't have footage. He held up cards. He never had any pictures in the monologue, you know, and all of the boys do now. You know, it's been going on for quite a while. And not that there's anything wrong with that. It's a different time, but it's an amazing thing to behold, the monologue itself, anyway. But beyond that, just the way he interacts with people is fascinating, you know?
But you talk about the boys, and there's been a couple iterations of late night hosts already since Johnny left. And it just shocks me when I've told people this past week what I was going to do this weekend on my show and said it was 25 years ago that he signed off. It really does seem unreal.
You know, I was in the room when that happened.
Wow.
I was able to coerce a friend of mine. Actually, a friend of mine was representing Doc Severinsen, a PR guy named Howard Bragman. And, you know, to him, I always have to, you know, throw
his name in.
But, yeah, sure. In fact, you always see Howard turn up on, if something goes wrong with a celebrity, somebody goes haywire and drives into a truck or they come out or whatever. This is the guy you go to, and you see him on CNN. It's money in the bank,
gotcha.
Howard Bragman. But yeah, but back then he was a lowly celebrity publicist, among other things, and Doc was a client, and I was able to, come on the extra ticket Howard had and watch. I had never actually. Now I had been in the sidelines watching Johnny do the show. Weeks earlier, in fact, I'd gotten access in the final weeks for Rolling Stone to be able to go sort of wander around for a few days behind the scenes of The Tonight Show, which was an unheard of thing.
I bet.
And it was fascinating. And that's where I met and became friends with Jeff Sotzing, who you've had on the program.
Sure.
Now, you know, oversees all things Carson, the empire.
Yeah,
he's the prince.
He is. He is the prince.
He is.
Yeah.
He is definitely the prince, and he's a great guy. He's been you know, awfully helpful to me over the years in my research. And geez, in the time since I started this project, he's been able to digitize the entire library and have it all indexed now with transcripts that you can read along the
side. Wow, I did not know that. Wow.
And yeah, it's an astonishing research gift, you know. And when I had started, frankly, not long after Johnny had passed away, but I was depending on the most avid fans, the kind of fans who will be up at this hour listening to this. Those are those kind of fans.
That's right.
You know,
you bet.
Who do watch Antenna TV. And they are out there, boy, and I bless them all because they found ways to start taping Johnny back before anybody had any tape.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was a brief period where you could order for like $100 any episode you wanted. A lot of people did that for some reason or another. Usually the celebrities, you know, who had been on also got tapes. And I think generations spun off into the world so that there are all these collectors, you know.
I bought a few of them, too. I found the ones that had Rickles on them and stuff, and I bought them for my own. Right? No, I bought them from, whatever Jeff's website was originally of selling all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, oh, this is good. Yeah, but this, oh, did you actually that far? You did it a long time ago.
Yeah,
then, huh?
Yeah, I did.
So you dropped $100 here.
I did, yeah.
I'm sharing my interview with Bill Zamy on The Legend of Johnny Carson on the 30th anniversary of Johnny's final Tonight Show. And there's more after the news next on 720 WGN.
And so it has come to this. I am one of the lucky people in the world. I found something I always wanted to do, and I have enjoyed every single minute of it. I want to thank the gentleman who shared this stage with me for 30 years, Mr. Ed McMahon. Mr. Doc Severinsen. You people watching, I can only tell you that it has been an honor and a privilege to come into your homes all these years and entertain you. And I hope when I find something that I want to do and I think you will like and come back that you'll be as gracious inviting me into your home as you have been. I bid you a very heartfelt good night.
We were talking about Johnny and his wife, Alex. You know, that was his fourth wife. And you said you were kind of courting her to talk about her for the book. He was married, you know, before he even started Carson Cellar and Who Do You Trust and some of those other shows in the 1950s. Is Joan still alive, by the way, his first wife?
His first wife, last I heard, she was alive. She's sort of a missing link.
Yeah.
She's had sort of a troubled life and kind of an itinerant woman. It's a peculiar story, but I don't think she didn't really have relationships with the sons so much anymore. You know, Johnny, they had three sons together.
Right.
Her name was Joan, but she went by Jody. But the funny thing is her name was Joan. And then, of course, his next second wife was Joanne.
Yeah.
And
the third one.
Wife was Joanna.
Yeah.
Joanna was the third one. And then somewhere in between, Joan Rivers came along and broke his heart, and he married an Alex.
That's right. But, you know, you talk about his wives. Joanne.
Joan Rivers broke his heart, obviously.
A different way.
Romantically, but
yes.
for bailing out and jumping ship
and
not telling him. And anyone who tries to defend that woman, including herself, from – you know, that charge, it's just incorrect because she did, they were so close. Sometimes you can see on antenna if Joan Rivers is a guest, how much Carson loves her. He dotes on her and he feeds her and he's just delighted by her at all times. And so when she really, I mean, had every opportunity to mention this to him well in advance, but she claims, well, she did before she told the press. It was the same day she told the press. She tried to call Johnny, and he already knew, of course,
yeah,
by then. and dropped the phone back on the hook, and never really forgave her for that, because that's a shame. And I don't know if that speaks well of him. I don't know, but I don't think she really tried all that hard to say, you know, I screwed up here.
I talked to Joan. So, I talked to Joan a couple months before she passed, and we talked a little bit about that. And she expressed, you know, remorse. And I know she has in other shows too that she never did that. But Johnny didn't trust a lot of people, and probably with good reason. You know, he had to keep his circle probably relatively tight, and Joan was in that circle, right? Yeah.
And yeah, look at the betrayal. He was Johnny found ways to, you know, bring people close to him who were very good at betraying him. And of course, the greatest example is Bombastic Bushkin,
yeah,
his attorney, who wrote Henry Bushkin, who wrote a memoir about, you know, working for Johnny. He left out all the parts about the where the money flowed and why Johnny was kind of concerned about maybe, you know, the honesty and trust factor anymore, and let him go. But that's all left out. But anyway, the funny thing about that book is it's sort of a horrible thing to write. If you're his best friend,
it is terrible.
You're his best friend and attorney. And he always likes to make fun of me when he hears, because I've been working on this book for a long time. It's sort of legendary. It's out there in Carson land. And believe me, I've had a really good reason for having lost the thread of it, especially over the last 3 or 4 years here. But it will be back, and we are going to get this thing out there. But anyway, he mocks me as a sycophant. And I don't think I'm a sycophant. I do love Johnny Carson. But I also know, as you'll see in that, American Masters, I can kind of point out the parts where it hurts, too.
Yeah.
And then Johnny, you know, the funniest thing is when I approached him for this Esquire piece that we did do back in 2002, that was the 10th anniversary of his departure.
Yeah.
Wow. So, my argument to him then was, it's only going to be 10 years once, you know, and oddly he sort of saw the merit in that, and also the fact that it's a lot easier to talk to a writer, you know, than to, you know,
interesting,
go on a big show,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And what was especially important was this was basically 9/11 had happened about 5 months earlier. So, September 11th of 2001. And so the world was completely still we were all in shock, you know, and we were all looking for a security blanket. And it occurred to me, we were the most important security blanket America ever had was this guy.
Yeah, it's true.
For those 30 years, in a way that nobody else could be. Not, you know, Johnny tucked you in at night. I mean,
Walter
Cronkite did not tuck you in at night. And
right.
I don't know that he would be a security blanket. He sort of saw what that was, you know, what I was getting at there, and it was a great time to talk to him. And
How long did you spend with him, Bill?
Oh, well, a couple few hours, really. Officially.
Yeah.
But there was, you know, we were in touch and such, but I never did want to, publishers came to me and after the Esquire piece came out then and pushed me to do the, you know, biography. And I knew that that would not please him, although he did tell me at the time he didn't give a damn, I'm using a softer word, what anybody cared or what anybody said about him anymore. You know, it didn't matter, you know, because he'd done it. And he was perfectly at home with himself and his history, I think.
More of my conversation with Bill Zamy on the legacy of Johnny Carson right after this on 720 WGN.
Sis boom ba.
Sis boom ba.
Describe the sound made when a sheep explodes.
When you were a kid watching the show, and I think we're about the same age, when you were a kid and you'd look in the TV guide and see who was on, and I never could, you know, I was, you know, that was way past my bedtime in a lot of cases, and it was one of those moments you hear about that truly happened to me too, is I'd stick around the corner and, you know, my dad didn't know I was standing there, but I was watching Carson with some of my favorite comedians. And I loved it when Dave Letterman was on in the 70s when he was doing stand-up or when he was filling in. I loved Rickles. I loved when the old school guys or the Sinatras or the Dean Martins. Angie Dickinson, I knew how cool that was when she was on there because Johnny would just flirt like a madman with this woman. You know,
they had a thing. They yeah. did have a thing. They literally did have a thing, but yeah. not. But it was in between their marriages. It was not anything untoward, and it was just, I think, silly. She talked about it with me a bit, but that was always great TV. Diane Cannon was another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
oh, you
yeah.
see the flirtation there.
Lonnie Anderson.
Lonnie Anderson later on. Sally Field, the sub, you know, and she's later now in recent years talked about dating him for the first time, which wow. was, which I was always surprised because he seemed so close to Burt Reynolds, and this was post Burt Reynolds. And Sally Field, she said she, Johnny was very, you know, amorous. He put the moves on with great style. So she said she felt like a little tadpole in the hands of an octopus or yeah. something. But what a cool octopus.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's funny. You know what I love? In the realm of women, you know, Johnny, it was great to see the ones who would keep him on his toes. And the one who really did a great job was Suzanne Pleshette. So oh. anytime you see her,
I'll look for
always
that.
Worth it. Yes, always. They had an understanding. She was one of the boys to him, and he was able to just be himself. And they knew each other off camera quite well, you know, and spent time there. The two couples,
yeah.
Johnny and his third wife, and Suzanne Pleshette, and her. Who, well, she was married to a guy. Well, anyway, she later married Tom Poston
right.
after I think the other fellow passed away.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, only people who listen to this show would know or care about that.
That's true. I think that's true. So Johnny, you know, when the night you're the afternoon you found out he passed away. I mean, that must have just punched you in the gut because it did for me and I think millions of Americans. Just you talk about the security blanket that went away when he got off the show, but then when you heard he passed, it was like, "Oh, wow."
You know, it was like, no, you got to be kidding. And it was really a denial thing at first. When I was getting called to go, because I was, you know, when I did the Esquire piece, that forced me out to do an awful lot of other media to talk about being the guy who Johnny sat with, you know, and talked to, and let me profile him. And so I had done, you know, the Today Show and, you know, I don't even know what. O'Reilly, don't ask. Who knew?
Yeah,
he seemed
wow.
to respect Johnny. But but when he died, it was crazy. It was like he died. It was a Sunday. And so all the news gathering, you know, they were all gearing up for Monday. And at the same time, I had to do whatever could be done for the day itself. But really, the next day, Monday, I was all over the place again.
Jeez. I bet. And I think Letterman.
And that's a surreal thing. It doesn't make sense. When I say that, it looks like it sounds like I'm proud that I was out on all these shows. It's not that. It's just like that's the last thing you feel like doing when you lose somebody that important to you is
yeah.
to go out and have to talk about what he meant to everyone. And then I realized, well, I've had the privilege of paying really close attention to him in a way other people don't. You know,
right.
I've studied him. I've written
yeah.
about him. He's
yeah.
been a subject. This is somebody I've, you know, had to try and crawl inside of as best one can. And that would only get more so in these years hence. But so it was sort of my responsibility to go out there and just say what could be said. And you know, it's just you add to a chorus of voices on days like that. It is kind of those days when a celebrity passes, they're the strange days on television anymore, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. That's what I felt like when Rickles passed away, you know, a couple
oh,
of months
yeah.
ago, same way. 25 years from now, or I mean, we're on the 25th anniversary of the last Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. 25 years from now, what would you
yes,
say Johnny's...
25 years from now, I will finish the book. I promise.
That was my question.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, okay.
No,
right,
what do you think, you know, we're talking generations later of him being off the air. I mean, where is his legacy going to be 25 years from now, Bill?
Well, I just hope I think, you know, every new generation comes along and likes to look over his shoulder a couple decades back at a time. And, you know, and sometimes they'll look back a couple decades back and see what they were interested in. And they were interested in something retro at that point. And it's like, I think this, he, you know, I've always said he's never going to have the same, unfortunately, and it's unfair, the same chance to have the same legacy as, say, Sinatra. Because Sinatra is music, and it's and mm-hmm. this is television, and it was of the moment at the time. Now it's fascinating to watch.
Yes.
Do not be turned off by the fact that you know you're going to hear Watergate jokes. I mean, come on, how great is that?
It is great.
I mean, learn about your country here. This is like the best history lesson you could possibly get.
Totally true.
It is. You're learning about all these presidential administrations as filtered to you the way it was filtered to America through Carson, and he always had a handle on it and what they were all doing. He went first. But he did something that the guys nowadays, I guess it's just, it'd be impossible. I would love to see Johnny Carson walk, you know, down the middle, you know, of Trump and see if he could survive that.
You always think about that, right? Yeah, think about that. When things happen in pop culture, what would he be saying? What would his monologue be about, right? Well, I'll tell you, the amazing Bill Zamy. Bill, I've always, again, wanted to chat with you on the air. Thank you for making that happen. Thank you for taking the time tonight. I love, love, love your work and what you do. Big fan, man.
Hey, same goes for you. I love you. I am one of your people. I am one of these people.
I'm a
Dave Flyer person.
I love that.
You know, and I'm under 60. Come on.
You are. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, sir.